In the first part of the interview with Inga Weber, we talk about how blockchain technology can enable disruptive change in organizations, including through innovating how the business processes are done. It's Anton Yeshenko and welcome to A Side of Data, a podcast about unconventional side of data science. Today's episode of A Side of Data joins Inga Weber, a professor at the Technical University of Berlin with experience in BPM, blockchain, DevOps, and artificial intelligence. He authored the Architecture for Blockchain Applications book, wrote highly cited papers on application of blockchain, including Untrusted Business Process Monitoring Execution Using Blockchain. Until very recently, he has been living in Sydney while working in CSIRO and University of New South Wales. He has worked on multiple successful projects that tightly couple blockchain research with real-life applications. With the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, they partnered to develop an Ethereum-based solution for smart conditional money for Australian National Disability Insurance Scheme. With the startup Lava, they develop a blockchain-based solution to secure supply chains and fight counterfeit and fraud. Good day and welcome to A Side of Data.
Hello. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for inviting me. So I'm very enthusiastic to talk about blockchain and processes with you because you're one of the leading researchers in the field. And I want to start off with a question. What is, in your view, the blockchain and how, in simple terms, could you describe this technology?
Right. So in our book, we define blockchain as a particular type of distributed ledger. And a distributed ledger is an append-only store of transactions, which is distributed across many machines, many computers, of course. And then a blockchain as a concept is a particular type of distributed ledger that is structured into a linked list of blocks. And each block contains an ordered set of transactions. And together with the linked list being ordered, that means there's a total order of all the transactions on a blockchain. Typical solutions use cryptographic hashes to secure the link from a block to its predecessor. And that means if you manipulate any of the blocks, then this chain of hashes that link one block to the next will break, and it's very easy to detect manipulation. And that is why blockchain is very good for integrity. Now, coming back to your second part of the question, a simple, maybe non-technical explanation of blockchain by analogy, also from our book, I think it's on page one of the introduction, or page two of the introduction. So imagine you have a group of people, say the population of the staff and students of the Technical University of Berlin, and they want to introduce a special community currency. Let's call this currency the TU dollar.
Okay.
And this will be a non-cash virtual currency. Now, let's say everyone initially gets 100 TU dollars.
So it looks like more like a regular currency. If everyone gets $100.
Yes. You need to start somewhere.
Right? Yes.
Somehow you need to have money initially in the system. Mm-hmm. And of course, you can say everybody needs to pay in 100 euros. And for those 100 euros that are being paid into a special trust bank account, then you create 100 TU dollars for everyone. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have that, if it's not backed by fiat currency from a nation or the European Union, by some federal bank or reserve bank, then you're creating money out of thin air, right?
Okay, yes.
Right. So,
but the main point is that everyone agrees on
everyone needs to agree on the current status of everyone in the system getting $100.
Yes.
And so we start that by everyone having a physical ledger book where they write the account balance of $100 for each account. And okay, that'll be a quite long list because TU has some 34,000 students and several thousand staff. So everybody that participates, let's say there's maybe 100 people that participate. So 100 times you write the account balance of 100 TU dollars. Now, let's say you want to pay from that account $50 to me.
Mm-hmm.
Then you write a transfer note, a transaction that says from my account I want to send $50 to the account of Ingo. And you sign that.
Yeah.
And then you send that signed transaction to everybody in the community. And everybody then records Anton minus 50, Ingo plus 50. And the transaction then becomes part of the ledger.
So basically what you're saying that only if every participant in this new TU currency will accept that, okay, there was a transfer, then okay, if everyone accepted, then it's real.
Yes. And then you have an account balance of 50 and I have an account balance of 150. If everybody agrees, then that is perfectly fine. Everybody has their own, right? There are 100 copies for 100 people of that ledger book, and every ledger book contains the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have the starting point of everybody gets $100, and then you have all the transactions that happened in the right order, and of course you need to ensure that people don't spend more money than they have. You can only, you know, it's positive integers including zero needs to be the account balance, or maybe not integers, maybe you have two decimal points, but that doesn't matter.
Yes.
So it needs to be positive or zero. So as long as you ensure that, then you can always get the current account balance of every account. And now let's say the TU dollar becomes a bit more popular and we have many transactions. And so we start grouping the transactions rather than everybody ensuring that every transaction is in the right order. We start grouping them and we exchange pages to make sure everybody has the same set of transactions in the right order. And that's basically how Bitcoin works.
Now in this system, it's not necessary that every participant should sign every transaction. Or
not everybody has to sign everything. The person that issues the transaction in the first place, and that must be the originator of the money, needs to sign. And everybody needs to be able to check that it's a valid signature. And of course, if you do that computationally, rather than with pen and paper, then we have public key cryptography. And if everybody knows what your public key is for that account, then they can verify that you digitally signed this transaction with the corresponding private key. Now the trick is in blockchains that you make the account number the same as the public key. So then you save essentially a data field, and it's reasonably easy. Everybody can verify that a transfer order from this account to somebody else is correctly verified, but because the account number is the public key, and then you can just check this digital signature.
Okay, let's assume now we have this system, and here comes basically the science that you're specializing also in, that is business process management. And first, maybe you can explain very shortly what is business process management, and then expand how the blockchain can be used there, and what can you make out of it.
Sure. Maybe I'll say one further thing about blockchain before going into BPM. So the thing where blockchain becomes really interesting past cryptocurrencies is the introduction of so-called smart contracts. These are user-defined programs that can be deployed as data attached to a transaction onto the blockchain. Every transaction is immutable, therefore the deployed code becomes immutable once it's deployed, once it's accepted into the blockchain as well. Then you can use that code and execute that code because you can invoke its functions through further transactions. And that's where blockchain becomes essentially a general compute platform. The Ethereum platform sometimes has been called the world computer as well.
So it's basically now on the blockchain there will be some executable parts that will be, for example, we'll use some conditions for some transactions or something.
Yes, and the code itself can hold assets as well. So essentially you can transfer Ether to the program code, and hopefully you specified under which conditions that money is transferred to somebody else as well.
I mean that you can even transfer, but not to the person, but to the code, and yes, that code can actually also have a deadlock or something that will not go anywhere.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
So you want to be careful with that. Ether, of course, being the cryptocurrency of the Ethereum blockchain, the second biggest blockchain after Bitcoin. And the code will be in charge of what happens with the money. Now, if you stuffed up, the money will be locked forever and ever in that smart contract. So the smart contract, once you deploy it, it gets an account address. Just like I have an account where you can send money, you can then send money to that account of the smart contract. And then, for example, you could use that to collect donations. Up to a certain date, you collect donations in the smart contract, and so after the date passed, the smart contract stops accepting donations, just rejects the transaction, sends the money back. All the money that is in the account by then will be transferred to the organization that then does some good with it. Mm-hmm. Or we can have we can use that to exchange goods or assets in general. If you have a title of the asset on the blockchain, for example, the title to your bicycle, who owns your bicycle, that piece of information is stored in the blockchain and is recognized by everybody, which will be the harder part.
Okay.
And if everybody agrees that the ownership of the bicycle is stored on the blockchain, then you can say that you can write a program where you can transfer the ownership of your bicycle into the program code, into escrow, and I transfer money into escrow, and if we both did that according to a pre-agreed sum of money for a pre-agreed bicycle, then the program code automatically transfers the title to me and the money to you, right? And then we don't have any uncertainty of, you know, you getting the money in the bicycle or me getting the money in the bicycle.
So basically even now I can write a piece of code and put it on the Ethereum network.
Yes.
That will, for example, I say, oh, I own this laptop, and it will be stored there.
Yes, I mean, you would basically have a registry of laptop ownership, and then you need some identifier to represent which laptop, for example, the serial number, and then you need an identifier saying who is the owner of that, and that would typically be your account address on Ethereum. Yeah.
Okay, I already see that it's powerful, and now we're coming to business processes and the more...
Yes. Right, so business process management, essentially a business process is how people do things in enterprises or in organizations, typically with the goal of adding some value for somebody or completing a specific business goal. For example, a selection and hiring process should pursue the goal of hiring somebody who is qualified for a particular position. And typically you have activities and events that are part of such a process, and you have certain orders in which they need to be executed. For example, here at the university, in almost all cases, we first have to publicly advertise a position before we can do interviews, and based on the interviews, where you have to follow some steps as well, you have to reject everybody except for your desired candidate, and only 14 days later you can actually then give a contract to your desired candidate. And these constraints, together with the activities and events, make up a business process. Mm-hmm. And business process management then is the research discipline and organizational practice of managing such business processes through IT and through organizational methods by themselves as well.
Mm-hmm. So I guess before, like, there are many companies who are already implicitly using this technology by the means of enterprise resource planning systems or business process management systems. So basically they already record some transactions in databases in order to keep track of these processes, as you described.
And typically you have some automation as well, right? Mm-hmm. If all the conditions are met for issuing a contract, then the system might automatically prompt somebody from the contracting department to create a contract for this person.
Okay, so the example would be maybe insurance. If you submitted some documents and the conditions of the sum might be too low, etc., are met, then some steps could be skipped, like checking something additionally.
Yeah, for example, you probably, as an insurance company, if somebody reports damage of 200 euros, claimable damage of 200 euros, you probably don't want to spend 200 euros on sending an investigator out to assess the damage. You can probably have a more lightweight process where the person, the claimant, takes photos on their smartphone and just emails them to the company.
So in my view, these processes are, like, currently are recorded in some databases in order to keep track, as I said, and as I also, to my understanding, the blockchain, and you want to basically introduce the blockchains in that, like, to replace or to complement these technologies of actually recording and keeping track, right?
So it can be used for that, but maybe let's take a small step back and think about what blockchain is good for. So as we talked about, through the introduction of smart contracts, blockchain has become a general purpose code execution platform, which can be used for anything. Even for creating and trading and mating virtual cats. so that's a very popular, at times it was very popular, a game called CryptoKitties, which clogged up the network because there were so many transactions about it, primarily because some of these virtual cats sold for tens of thousands of dollars.
Okay.
So that got some people really excited. So it can be used for anything, including, of course, for ERP and business process management systems, for executing process models, etc. And indeed, of course, in our research, we have looked at doing that. So looked at generating code from a business process model that implements the business process model. And that being smart contract code that you can deploy to the blockchain.
And a process model is a description of how the work should be done in the company.
Yes. Yeah. In this case, so you can, of course, have process models, just modeling how things, how the processes are organized at a company. You can do that for various purposes, from training new staff, or documentation for regulatory compliance, for example, to execution of the models. then the model will essentially become an IT artifact, typically enriched, of course, with some kinds of technical details on which system to call where, and which functions to invoke on the system, how to pass data around, etc. And such a model can be interpreted by a business process management system, BPMS, specifically the execution platform of it, and it can then become the implementation essentially. And so we can do the same thing on blockchain. Instead of having a server somewhere in a data center that interprets the, or in your private cloud, that interprets the process model and executes it, you can generate code, deploy that as a smart contract on the blockchain, and execute it there. And it may be a public blockchain in some cases, mm-hmm. or probably in the case of business processes, more often it'll be some permission blockchain, for example, by a consortium of companies that want to collaborate and want to have cross-organizational business processes run on the blockchain. So if we look at it from that side, you know, where does it make sense to do it? So you can write any code, right? You can, theoretically, you could take your entire ERP, re-architect, refactor it, mm-hmm. and deploy it on a blockchain. That might not make too much sense, right? So the question is, when does it make sense? When is it actually useful? And the strong suit of blockchain is integrity of the data. So remember the hashes that link one block to the next and the checking of the digital signatures, etc. So all of this adds to integrity of data and of computation through the smart contracts.
And what do you mean by integrity?
Integrity meaning that that it's hard for anybody to manipulate data okay. that was written in the past. Mm-hmm. Or to change the outcomes of a computation. Because if the program code is also immutable, cannot be changed after it's been deployed, or can only be changed if you follow pre-specified change processes, then the code will execute as deployed, and that means you have integrity also for the computation. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, has various applications or various abstract applications like asset control and management. So cryptocurrencies, coins and cryptocurrencies essentially are assets. Your bicycle registry, your laptop registry that we talked about earlier, all of these are assets that you can manage quite efficiently on a blockchain. Of course, it's also good in the sense of non-repudiation. So you cannot go back from transactions claiming that you never sent that transaction. Mm-hmm. You digitally signed it and sent it at a time. It was recorded at a time. And then later on, you cannot say, oh, but I never wanted to sell my bicycle. Can I please have my bicycle back? That doesn't work because of non-repudiation.
Okay, so basically, it would be a good platform for collaboration between companies that want to execute some processes together.
Yes, or so essentially, it enables collaboration across organizations and individuals with low or even no mutual trust between them.
Okay.
So in the Bitcoin network, nobody trusts each other. Mm-hmm. But they verify each piece of information as it is created, as it's written, as it's communicated. Every transaction is checked by tens of thousands of computers around the world. Every block is checked because essentially it's full paranoia mode, right? Nobody trusts anybody with anything, and we're talking about bitcoins that are worth billions of dollars. So yeah. There is a reason not to trust anybody. And let me try and answer my question, where does it apply?
Okay.
Right, where does it make sense in the context of ERP or BPMS to use such a system? So, for example, for cross-organizational business processes, supply chain processes, for things that go across countries. For example, if you have a multinational company where the individual organizations in the countries, the subsidiaries, are quite strong, then it might make sense to have, for the global level, have a blockchain-based system through which the individual countries exchange information. It's also easy, relatively easy in a blockchain system to have a network that can be flexibly extended or even shrunk. If you have essentially a landscape of organizations that may want to join, may want to leave a consortium, a blockchain has good facilities for supporting that, because it starts from the origins like Bitcoin, where you have an open network. Mm-hmm. Where anybody can download the Bitcoin client software, run it on their local computer, and then join the network and start contributing to it or mm-hmm. start verifying it. And so this translates into flexibility in terms of the consortium. And you have, for example, you might have regulatory reasons for relying on that high integrity. Yeah, so there's a case publicized by the Hyperledger by Hyperledger Fabric for a solution developed by the American Association of Insurance Services mm-hmm. that is deployed productively, and it allows insurance companies to store compliance data and in a high integrity form, and then to give the regulator access to only the pieces of information they need access to okay. later on. And the regulator can rely on that data not being manipulated after it's been initially written because of the high integrity mm. property of the blockchain.
That sounds good. Can you describe now how awesome the system is, and what about some maybe limitations or some problems that can be with the systems? Because as I see, they for now only provide basically trust and better, everything better. So
yes, well, so there are a number of downsides, of course. So if you look at Bitcoin, for example, there is no central registry of who's mining Bitcoin and who's attempting to mine Bitcoin and what computers they use. But depending on what you can see, what you can publicly observe, there are estimates on how much power is consumed in okay. establishing this high integrity. And that is an awful lot of power, electric energy, that is used for Bitcoin mining. If Bitcoin were a nation, it would rank in the top 40 of nations in terms of energy consumption. That's not a good yeah. thing. The reason for that is the proof of work consensus mechanism, where thousands of computers and even probably hundreds of data centers around the world compute just to produce the next block for the Bitcoin blockchain. And that makes it, of course, very resilient to attacks. The more compute power is behind the network, the harder it is to attack the network. But the power consumption is of course, by and large, not great for our planet, even though quite a bit of it is hydropower, for example, in Canada. But there's probably a lot of coal power going into that as well. So essentially, we haven't found a good alternative consensus mechanism that is equally good as proof of work
okay.
in an absolutely no trust environment. If you have some level of trust, you can use different mm-hmm. Systems, which is quite common across consortia of organizations or companies. Mm-hmm. there's a lot of work going into that in the ecosystem, so both on the research side but also on the development side, through open source developers, startup companies, etc. The Ethereum Foundation, Hyperledger.
But I guess these are the general blockchain problems.
What
about more process related?
Oh, limitations for business processes. I see.
Like what would you write in your papers as a limitation section?
Okay, but we're talking about limitations of applications, not of scientific methods.
Yeah.
So limitations for these systems. For example, you have immutability of data, meaning it cannot be changed after it's been written. And that sometimes clashes with
that
the
was
world.
A good part. Hmm? That was just integrity. It was a good part.
Yes, it's a great part, but sometimes it clashes with the reality of what's out there.
Right? Okay.
So the reality is programmers put bugs into programs, and if your program code is deployed in an immutable way, it's not that trivial to fix those bugs. So you typically want to have some way of updating the code afterwards, and then it's a question of how critical is it to replace the code quickly versus how much governance can you have around that. For example, if you have 100 companies in a consortium and you want to replace one of the central smart contracts, you might need a unanimous vote of the company saying yes, we are all happy with for that to happen. Or maybe you want a 2/3 majority or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you need to have these mechanisms in place, and if you want to have 2/3 majority, then that just needs time. And then while that update process is waiting for the 2/3 majority to come through, the vulnerable version of the code might still be out there. So that's something that
I can imagine someone putting just a sign like not more than 5,000 but less than 5,000. It's already changes everything for the conditional contract or something.
Yes, yeah. And you know, bugs happen. There are some spectacular cases of bugs in the blockchain community. For example, the DAO hack. From 2016, some $60 million dollars worth of crypto assets were stolen, and later on only returned by part of the network, 90% of the network splitting off from the remaining 10% through a so-called hard fork. So there are some real-life cases where that happened. Another thing is, you know, immutability of data might be a problem if you have personal data. Of course, in the European Union, we now have the GDPR regulation that essentially limits how you can store personal data and what you can do with it. And you must give the user the right to have their data deleted.
Yeah, if it changes, then you, like, if it becomes more tight, you cannot easily change it in the system.
Well, you can override it, so you can have sort of a recent, a current view of the data.
But you still have all the data that was before.
Yeah, all the data that was before. Now, if the user asks you to delete all the data, then it's a little bit problematic. And, you know, maybe one solution is that you encrypt the data for each user with an individual key for that user. And if the user asks you to delete the data, you throw away the key. And then you cannot decrypt it. Now, technically, we understand it's not the same as deleting the data, which is impossible on a blockchain, unless you break some fundamental aspects of the blockchain. And so, but legally that might be acceptable as a solution. The other thing is, you know, if you put data on a blockchain, typically that data is visible to a lot of people. So there are ways to restrict the visibility of parts of a blockchain, for example, through channels in Hyperledger. Then you can pick a group of participants who are the only ones to get who get to see the data, but on a blockchain like Ethereum, everybody at the moment everybody would see all the data that is stored, and now you can again encrypt the data, but the data is stored there forever and ever, mm-hmm. until as long as there is one node that still has, holds a copy of that blockchain data structure, you can reconstruct everything, right?
Okay.
So if we look maybe 5, 10, 20, 30 years into the future, maybe quantum computing is able to crack all the encryption methods that we know today, and maybe your data will become maybe it'll become trivial to decrypt your data then. Now, if you think about that, you might want to consider what you put on the blockchain in the first place. Is it personal information? Is it medical data? Do you still care if somebody is able to read that in 5 years' time? If the answer is, yes, I care, I don't want anybody to read that ever, then you should not put it on the blockchain in the first place.
Okay, understood. Let's more go from general explanations to something very specific. Maybe you can we can talk about some use cases that exactly you worked with.
Before we get more concrete, just this morning I read something. Today on the planet there is about 1 billion people without proof of identity, and about 2 billion
people. 1 billion people, okay.
And about 2 billion people without a bank account. Now, these people obviously are excluded from a lot of services and opportunities because of not having proof of identity or a bank account. And blockchain, of course, can play a role in that. For example, in the Zaatari refugee camp managed by the United Nations in Jordan, 50,000 refugees can access their help funds, their relief funds from the United Nations through a scan of their iris. So they can go into a shop, buy groceries, and then at the cash register, they don't use cash, they use their iris, it gets scanned, and through that they can access their bank account on the blockchain where they can pay the merchant.
So that's their identity, basically.
And the proof of identity is biometric, and you don't need to rely on things like passports or driver licenses that might have gotten lost or taken from the people when they were fleeing. So I think there is a lot of possibility to really improve the lives of people in developing countries. For developed countries, where we have typically trusted authorities and trustworthy authorities that are deserving of our trust, for those countries you probably won't have such deep user-facing life-changing innovation, because we have driver licenses, we have ID cards, etc. We have bank accounts. It's not that hard to get a bank account, so if you have a proof of identity. Then maybe we won't see these big jumps in innovation through blockchain. But it really is an opportunity for all the connection points between spheres of control, for all of these connection points and the fabric connecting organizations, institutions, companies and people, for this fabric to get innovated. Blockchain and the disruptive pressure from blockchain is a way for everybody to take a good hard look at that space and innovate with or without blockchain, but to bring more momentum into innovation at that part of society and economy.
Thank you for listening for this episode of A Side of Data. This is the first part of the interview with Inga Weber. Find the second part and continue listening. If you have questions, comments or requests, follow us at Twitter at @sideofdata or send us email @sideofdata@protonmail.com.